at the party, Richter!
And welcome back to See You at the Party, Richter. I'm Chris Chapman, and with me as always is my co-host Aaron Frescas.
I like to pee in the shower.
And my other co-host, who hopefully doesn't have anything disgusting to say, Joseph Beck Castro.
Hello, cutie pies. I also like to pee in the shower.
God damn it.
All right. Sorry, I was trying to rush before this episode, and I told them, and I was like, oh yeah, it started the new episode. I could have just said that on mic that I don't like to pee in the shower. It's convenient to pee in the shower. Yeah.
I mean, I do it because I can't reach the sink from the shower.
You probably could get some of it in there, but you don't want to hit your toothbrush.
Exactly.
Anyhow.
Anyway. Shall we continue?
Yeah, sure. Today we are back to do a whole lot of stuff. Trivia, kill count, all sorts of stuff for the 2019 Arnold vehicle, Terminator Dark Fate.
Before we get into that, I got a couple corrections to make from the previous episodes. We've been mentioning that she's not my mom, Todd. It's actually, she's not my mother, Todd.
Yes, so. I noticed that on the something that I was, yeah.
Yeah, I had mentioned I wasn't sure if it was anything that T-1000 comes in contact with, and it is.
Sorry.
Okay, I'll leave that in. So yes, Sarah, our Arnie mentions that at some point. And also the song Guitarist Cadillac by Dwight Yoakam. I mentioned it in this movie. I was like, oh yeah, that's that song. You guys are like, yeah, what, whatever. But that's actually the song that's playing at the beginning when Naked Arnie goes into the bar in Terminator 2. Where he's like, you close, give them to me. Wait. No, yeah, that's close. Terminator 1.
Do you think he says the same thing, doesn't he?
No, he has for his bike too. Oh,
okay.
So, yeah. That's all I got. So,
the last episode will clearly be stricken from the record, and we'll move on to today, where I think Aaron has some trivia facts for us.
Yeah, a lot of it.
About this movie, presumably.
Oh, sure.
Were they all in the shower facts?
Like, yeah, they were. Like different ways to do it.
Yeah.
This is how to look like Arnold when you're doing it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can pee upward because it just goes on your body and you just wash it off.
That's true. Or if you want, you can pee against the wall, and the closer you get, the more it splashes on you. And it's kind of like warm water coming back at you, and you try to figure out like which one's hotter, the pee that's splashed. Okay, anyway, let's get to the trivia. Okay, so we're going to start off with some basic trivia tidbits before we get into the what I like to call the good stuff. But so first off, this was Linda Hamilton's first movie where she gets top billing.
Wow.
This is the first Terminator movie where Schwarzenegger is billed second, although that's wrong because I'm assuming he wasn't billed first in
Salvation.
Yeah, that'd be great if he was, though. Schwarzenegger, Christian Bale. Moving on. According to producer James Cameron, there were some additional shots of John Connor having a brief conversation with Sarah, but they were cut because the de-aging visual effects were not up to snuff in those shots.
Good choice.
Which I think I might have mentioned. Some of these I might have mentioned while we were whatever, you know, like watching the movie. But anyway, so the filmmakers decided that the T-800 would retain a similar look to what has been seen in the past. It says, quote, I think they wanted to stay traditional and retain humanity to him, but also not make him ugly or monstrous. This was John Rosengant, who's someone that works on the movie, probably a visual artist or like a makeup effects guy.
I'm not understanding, like, what, as opposed to what? Like, were they planning on...
I have no idea for this first part. The second part is where it gets interesting, like,
oh, okay,
got of it. This. But there's a heroic feeling to the T-800 starting from T2. The minute that goes away, it goes to zombie land, which, again, I don't know what he's talking about. So the heroic look was to be maintained. However, Rosengant agreed with Bill Corso, who's, I'm assuming, is just his friend.
Like, it's, oh, Billy G. Yeah.
It's probably just his friend that he's.
Are you just getting these off IMDb?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're presented completely without context.
Yeah, exactly. They might actually be linked, but when you look it on your phone or get it on your phone,
yeah. But usually they're just like copy pasted from some other random article or whatever.
Yeah. But well, see, I feel like they didn't used to be like. I feel like they like, because eventually you start off IMDb. The ones up top, like the top trivia ones, are usually like good. And then you start getting to the bottom to where the spelling is kind of like, oh, that's not how you spell that, actually.
Yeah.
And they're just like opinions. When that's when I'll usually go in there, because usually I'm kind of drinking when I'm, well, for always. But like, I'll go in there and like reword them or correct them or just get rid of the opinion part of it and take out the stuff. And I'm just like hoping that like the person goes back in there and they're like, what the fuck is this? Like, that's not how I worded it.
Yeah, I didn't put an Oxford comma in there. This is bullshit.
So anyway, so Bill Corso, his buddy Billy C, he also said he wanted to bring something new to the character. And it says, quote, Bill executed the work and gave concepts to the director and Arnold as to where he wanted to take this. He wanted to present a slightly different looking Arnold than what we've seen in the past, and rightly so. One of the most interesting variables that became apparent from the start was the, which, okay, I didn't notice this. But he said that the T-800 would have aged. Well, I did notice that. T-800 would have aged after the 22-year time jump. But Rosengrant also had worries initially, because but loved that the writers had accounted for it on the time. He said, quote, back on T-3, we were trying to disguise the stuff. You know, like, if there was a wrinkle, we put a wound there. It's just great that they wrote the story for Arnold's age this time around. I'm assuming he didn't work on Genesis.
I guess not, yeah.
But anyway, so this is Bill Corso, who is the guy. He said, my idea was, let's keep all the appliance work on Arnold paper thin. This is what I don't remember from the movie. So he said, it really is just like ripped up skin that we would see deep into. But he's an older guy now, and it's living tissue over an endoskeleton, which has aged naturally for 30 or 40 years. As an older Terminator, it was also decided, this isn't the quote anymore, but as an older Terminator, it was also decided that T-800 would bleed much less freely, as his blood would have grown darker and thicker over time. So it's like turning into oil, basically. Does it happen to real people?
No.
No.
I mean, we got like white blood cells and shit.
I had no idea.
I mean, as blood gets older, it like dries up and stuff, but like, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't understand any, like, maybe in the greater context this article makes a lot more sense, but this all just, I feel like Billy Corso is the one who posted this to IMDb just so he can get his name on there a few times.
He says to create the endoskeleton elements visible under T-100's flesh, which I don't remember seeing that at all in the movie.
At the end.
Sure, when he's actually gets ripped off.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It said ILM was very heavily involved, and visual effects supervisor, which it actually says, Eric Barbara, was very open and excited to allow me to collaborate on the looks of anything makeup and cosmetic related. There's also a lot of depth to the makeups, which is really exciting for me and hopeful. The result is the perfect marriage of practical makeup and CG, which, okay, if you say so. Anyway, this next one's better. So Edward Furlong was on set for a day to film John Connor's death scene, like I think I mentioned.
Yeah, he did.
And he gives the most Edward Furlongian quote about his time spent filming, saying, quote, we did some CGI, they paid me. So, I mean, you know. That's it? No, he goes on, sorry. I'm going to give it a pause. It kind of bums me out, because I'd love to do the whole one and make a shit ton of money. I would love to do more, but we'll see what happens. That's Edward Furlong.
I mean, that shit, I can't blame him.
I feel like they left the door open for my character, you know.
Yeah. Never know.
I mean, okay. So what would happen if, like, you know, T2... if T2...
Look, you look back at her. She's like, you're like, you know, she has COVID, and you're like, what the fuck? You know I'm trying to record here.
Yeah, you're ruining this podcast. Yeah, she can't hear me anyways. But leave that in. She'll hear it later. So, like, at the end of T2, let's say they, you know, destroy Skynet and then, like, the apocalypse and Judgment Day and everything never happens. Mm-hmm. And then, like, do you think, like, John would look like Edward Furlong does now? Like, I think that would be a kind of a great wrinkle where it's, like, he didn't have the burden of being, like, mankind's savior. And he went through all this fucking trauma, much like we see with child actors. So he, like, mm-hmm. gets into drugs and it's, like... You know, could actually like follow the plot line of Edward Furlong's life, and then like he just comes out looking like how he does now after like all the shit that he's been through. That's what we need to see.
Instead of like the scars everywhere. He has emotional scars.
Exactly.
Yeah. Easy money.
So next
But make it a romantic comedy.
Yeah, that that's good. Him and Claire Danes.
Terminator Salivation.
What?
Okay, that's more of like the X-rated one.
But... yeah, that's like the porn version.
Yeah. Which, if there's the
really
not
H porn version.
Yeah, if there's not a Terminator Salivation porn knockoff movie out there, I'm going to be very upset.
Terminator Genitits. Again, IMDb trivia. So it's the first part, the first little part of it is, many viewers took issue with the fact that the movie opens with the death of John Connor, especially since producer James Cameron had always voiced his dislike for of how the characters Hicks and Newt from his movie Aliens were unceremoniously killed off at the beginning of the sequel Aliens 3.
Spoilers.
Alien 3, yeah. Which that sounds like commentary. But sure. The second part is, anyway, so however, Cameron has since stated that he himself suggested this shocking twist in order to, quote, pull the rug out from underneath the entire construct that's been going on for like the last three decades, man. I ended up adding the heavy part to it, but it doesn't say man. I kind of want to add that in IMDb now because I can edit it. But anyway, both Linda Hamilton and director Tim Miller concurred, stating that it was a good way to evolve the story and shock the audience. Miller also felt that John Connor had already received plenty of exposure in the previous three movies, so he wanted to make room for other characters. He admitted that they experimented with moving the revelation of John's death further down the movie to the hotel scene, but it didn't work as well dramatically. Which, I guess, I don't know. So it would have just jumped right into, I don't even remember sorry, it's been a few weeks.
I don't know. If she shows up without John killing Terminators, I feel like it's going to become pretty clear what happened even before they get to the flashback.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Oh.
I don't know.
For some reason, I was thinking like John would be there, and then he dies right before the hotel scene.
And, then it shows him like getting killed in the past, and he's like, the reason way he dies is like Biff in Back to the Future 2, where he gets erased. He's like fading away. I don't know if that was a deleted scene in Back to the Future 2.
I think it was a deleted scene. Okay.
Or Marty McFly in the first one, I guess. He's like, and then the Terminator says, "You've been erased." Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking they would go along with John still being the savior and everything, and then like, you know, they go to kill the Terminator and what the fuck is her name? Not Grace.
Sarah Danny. Connor?
No. Oh.
Danny?
Danny, yeah. You know, and they save her or whatever, but then John dies and Sarah's like, "Oh no, like future humanity's ruined," and Grace is like, "Nah, dog, we got your next savior right here in Danny. That's what I came back for." And we're just like, "All right, word, cool. Do this."
That is funny. If she's like, "We got your next savior right here," and then she's like, points to her crotch. She's like,
"DX,
suck it." Okay. Anyway. So yeah, I guess that makes sense then, because I didn't think about that. Because I was like, "Does it make like?"
I don't know how much it affects it, but you know, I don't think you really know that kind of thing.
Maybe she lies about it. He's out of the game now. He's getting drunk somewhere. Anyway. So director Tim Miller explained the decision to kill off John Connor in the beginning of the movie was taken early on in the production process. I feel like that doesn't make sense, but you get what I'm saying. And agreed upon by almost everyone. With Skynet's creation prevented in Terminator 2, John no longer had any heroic role to play, and they could not imagine him, quote, being a 36-year-old accountant somewhere. John's
ignoring the T2 alternate ending where he becomes a senator.
Yeah.
Which, whatever. Yeah.
Apparently Tim Miller's a fan, but not that much of a fan.
Fucking amateurs.
But John's daughter was briefly considered to be the new savior of humanity, but Miller...
You're not my director, Tim.
Sorry. Wait. Oh, I get. No, wait. No, I don't. Anyway. sorry. Okay. Tim... John's daughter was briefly considered to be the new savior of humanity, but Miller decided to step away from the chosen one trope in favor of an everyman / woman who rises through adversity. John's death also had the advantage of providing a solid story arc for Sarah, since, quote, "Sarah is at her best when she has tragedy to overcome or something to fight. And you need that rocket fuel for her to be in a dark place." And what better rocket fuel than that she made the decision and it led to the death of her son, which just reminds me of Last Action Hero, where he finds out that he's like, are you kidding me? I experienced all this stuff and like it never actually happened. They're like, well, you know, it was good for the story. Like somebody killed off your son.
See, what if Sarah got pregnant again and had another kid and also named him John? Checkmate, Skynet. You don't fuck up. Killed the wrong John.
That's a good idea. That's how you bring him back. And and then you show the old John's death. And then you're like wondering why she's treating this new John like an asshole. Like she's not like really into him, you know?
John Jr. She calls him John Jew.
So anyway, I already mentioned the Sarah's car scene thing, right? Like where Grace shows up and Sarah's actually like there.
I don't think so. What are you talking about?
Grace's first scene when she
today.
Yeah, you mentioned that last time how originally it was written that Sarah or not that it was written, but that you can see her truck on the bridge,
right? Yeah, you can see her like Jeep or whatever it was. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it actually is there.
You mentioned that last time.
Okay, cool. So that was the last one for the basic trivia. Anyway, let's get it. How about we check in with James Cameron and Tim Miller on their individual experiences with the process of making the movie? I'm sure this isn't going to go.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure this was a fucking picnic for everybody.
Exactly. So all of this is coming from a few different interviews they did with various websites. First one is from The Hollywood Reporter and was an interview they did. I think it was before the movie even began filming. And you can kind of tell because they're both very excited about it. Which is just sad because like the further into it you get and you start reading stuff, you're like, oh, it's not so much James Cameron. It's more Tim Miller who just like,
yeah, I'm
gets
sure
beaten down.
I'm guessing James Cameron didn't have a bunch to worry about.
Yeah. But so first off, apparently James Cameron helped Tim Miller get Deadpool greenlit, which was news to me. Like, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Or I've never heard that.
I guess Tim Miller showed, again, this is according to them, and I don't know, like, again, I think we've said in one of the other episodes where I don't know how much to believe when, like, they're saying stuff, anyway. So I guess Tim Miller showed him that, like, famous test footage that they shot that everyone loved, and James Cameron loved it, so he had Tim Miller send him the script, which he also liked. So according to Tim Miller, James Cameron made a call to help, like, move stuff forward with it.
It's interesting.
Which, yeah, it's cool. So, and I, by the way, I love the byline of the, this Hollywood Reporter article. Is that what it's called? The byline? Like the.
Yeah, yeah.
Right under the title.
The author. Yeah.
No, sorry. Not the byline. Then right under the title of the article, like the little description.
Oh,
like the little
tiny
summary.
Yeah.
I don't know
what it's called.
Okay, cool. So anyway, it says Cameron and Deadpool director Tim Miller sit down with THR to talk for the first time about how they will reboot a storied but troubled franchise for the new era of Amazon drones and AI anxiety. That says, quote, people ask me, will the machines ever win against humanity? I say, look at the people on their phones. The machines have already won. James Cameron.
Did he really say that?
Yes.
Oh my
because
God.
Then I watched the interview where he said that. And it just makes me think that James Cameron probably believed that Apollo 11, like the moon landing, was fake.
It's also very hypocritical. He's like a guy that's been pushing technology, especially in movie making.
Yeah.
You know, like with T2 and fucking all this other shit and going to the bottom of the ocean to look at the Titanic and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Avatar. So eat a dick, James Cameron. And if you're listening, first of all, thank you. Second of all, come on the show and refute your point. So yeah. I'd love to debate you. So hopefully that interview will come out soon.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Look forward to that.
I was really hoping you'd say, yeah, when he went to the bottom of the ocean to find the Titanic for Avatar. it's like, why'd you do that? And he was like, I don't know, I really wanted to go down there, which is true. But anyway.
Yes.
Okay, so I have some of the more interesting answers to the questions they were asked. But the interviewer asks, what does a James Cameron produced Terminator movie look like in 2017? And James Cameron says, this is a continuation of the story from Terminator 1 and 2, and we're pretending the other films were a bad dream, or an alternate timeline, which is permissible in our multiverse.
Yes.
Sorry, who said that?
This is James Cameron.
This is James Cameron saying that. Okay.
So this was really driven more by Tim than anybody, surprisingly, because I came in pretty agnostic about where we took it. The only thing I insisted on was that we somehow revamp it and reinvent it for the 21st century. Like, he makes it, which, what was this? I think we said it to when he was doing the ride. He comes in and he just kind of doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's completely over this franchise.
Yeah.
But then once he sees what they're doing with it and he actually has control over it, it's like...
Yeah. I feel like I don't know. He sees a bad movie come out and he's like, they're fucking tarnishing my good name. Yeah, exactly. And then like a year later, he forgets about it. He's like, do whatever the fuck you want with it. I don't give a shit.
And then he hears the ideas and he's like,
yeah,
I would be the exact same way though.
Same.
Yeah, just not give a fuck. And then somebody's oh, we want to do this. And like, what are you doing with my thing? Like, God damn it. Like, let me get in there.
You're fucking doing it wrong.
Yeah. Idiots. Jesus Christ. Bunch of fucking amateurs.
I just think it's really funny that he was all over Terminator Genesis the same way he was all over Dark Fate, being like, no, this time we really got it. Like, I endorse this. And then in 2017, he's like, yeah, we're just pretending those other movies are a bad dream.
Well, he makes it very clear in a few different interviews that all the movies between T2 and Dark Fate are horseshit. Like, he's also said, like, which I think I said during the Genesis one, that the only reason he was saying that about Genesis was because of his relationship with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He didn't want to badmouth the movie.
Sure.
So,
we'll, it's a better movie than Dark Fate.
We'll hear some more quotes from. We'll hear some more quotes from him about it in another interview I have. But yeah, he was not a fan. But anyway, I'm gonna try to put this all together. Like, I was trying to like group it all together to make everything like. If there's a little bit of an overlap, that's why. But anyway, the next question the interviewer asks is, this summer was not a good one for the box office. Why do you think that people aren't going to theaters, and what's the solution? Which has nothing to do with the movie. I just like James Cameron's answer. He says, look, I don't know what the answer is for the industry at large. I'm getting aggressive with my Jim Cameron answers.
I like to think he grabbed the guy by the lapel and he's fucking spitting in his face.
I don't think the industry at large is hurting that much. A lot of the good writing is now in television, and I think that feature films could benefit from better writing and better character work in general, and a little less spectacle. Not that I don't like spectacle, but I like it at the right moment. You just have to make good movies. Pretty simple.
Okay.
Pretty simple, says a fucking auteur genius.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
Sure, he's not wrong, but not everybody's fucking James Cameron.
Just make good movies. That's what I gotta do.
He might be a prick, but he's like still really fucking good at this without trying, probably.
Yeah. Especially with action movies.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and there's...
And not that he doesn't try. That's not really what I meant. I just meant, like, he's clearly has a fucking affinity for this.
Yeah. It's like me with beating off. I mean, there can be a good, like, crossover between, like, spectacle and a good movie. And you see that with a lot of Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Infinity War, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. But... then sometimes they're just like spectacle just for spectacle, and those movies suck.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of comic book movies. Suicide Squad, yeah. Jurassic World, Jurassic Park 3. Ugh.
Fucking hate Jurassic World.
Park 3 was fine. I don't know.
That's the one I've seen the least, so I don't even know.
I've seen that movie once in theaters, and I left very angry. But even more to my point, like the difference between Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Hobbit trilogy. Ooh, like the Hobbit trilogy was just like spectacle and a shitload of CGI, and they're just like running a lot and shit.
Yeah.
And like Lord of the Rings trilogy's character development. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went in and watched the first Lord of the Rings and didn't realize it was going to be a trilogy. So they got over the mountain and like, there's Mordor, Mount Doom. I'm like, all right, time for some action. And they're like, end of movie. I'm like, motherfucker, there's two more of these things? And then same thing with The Hobbit. Because I'm like, all right, well, Lord of the Rings is 3 books. Hobbit's sure. 1 book. We're going to get one fucking movie. Get in there, watch it. And then like, same fucking thing happens. Like, directed by Peter Jackson. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So I didn't watch the other two for like a long time. And then watched them. And it's like, well, I didn't miss anything. So yeah.
They're god awful.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. So he's
just make good movies.
Yeah, just make good movies. He's got a good understanding of the film industry, which is I don't know.
Why if you make good movies, they would do good.
Okay. Anyway, so I was gonna say that he seems to know what audiences want, but I think the fact that he's making 3 more Avatar movies 10 years after everybody forgot about it kind of probably says otherwise. But
I mean, I assume so. But we'll see what happens when fucking Avatar comes out. Maybe it'll be a fucking smash hit for some reason.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I saw the trailer. I have no interest in it, but, you know.
Same. I watched the trailer, too, and I was like, okay, well, there's more of that.
I only needed to watch it once.
I think I might have watched it twice.
It's like very... Sure. The first time watching it was fun and it was interesting and he's really good at special effects stuff, but
Just makes me sad that he's wasting 10 years doing that instead of making True Lies 2, where like the Russians are bad guys now.
Yeah.
Like, but in a very stereotypical way. Like they always have vodka. What else do Russian people do?
They got those hats.
Yeah, they're all wearing the hats that Arnold wears in Ready.
Yeah. They're all doing that dance where they put the one arm over the other one and kick their legs out.
Yeah. Kicking shots of vodka into each other's mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that would have been a good movie. I'm sure it would have been.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, next question from the interviewer. So he says, Jim, you're handing over the keys to your baby to someone who doesn't have much experience. I guess it's not really a question. It's just a comment.
Yeah.
But James Cameron says, look, we're both at risk. That's the nature of a director-producer relationship, but I feel really confident. We're already about 7 or 8 months into the creative process, and we haven't killed each other yet. There's been some fur flying, but it's always been for the right reason. I feel Tim's commitment. I feel David's commitment. This is the S. Goyer, the nostalgia profiteer. They feel my commitment. That's it. We're brothers in arm at this point. And I absolutely love it. That ends it. With at this point.
Yeah.
So this next interview was from deadline.com and it's James Cameron going into a little bit more detail about why the other film sucked. So he says, quote, I suppose it's an unusual situation from a high level perspective since I wasn't involved in the three intervening films. But when I talked to David Ellison, who's the guy that I guess does he still own them then? He doesn't own them anymore, right?
No clue.
Okay, the one of the producers, like the guy that owned them before James Cameron got them back, I don't know. But anyway, when I talked to David Ellison about it, his vision for this was basically to go back to basics and do a continuation from Terminator 2, which is one of his favorite films. He's always believed in the potential of Terminator, but he really felt that his own film, Genesis, and he was quite honest with me about this, fell short of the mark and didn't really do what he wanted it to do. So he said, let's start with a blank slate and take it back to Terminator 2. And that idea was intriguing. Mm-hmm. So he says later in the interview, one of the things that seemed obvious from looking at the films that came along later was that we would need to get everything back to basics and that we would need to avoid the mistakes of making things overly complex and that we needed to avoid stories that jump around in time and one that goes backward and forward in time. Which is pretty obvious what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's like very specifically Genesis.
Yes. Let's keep it simple and relative unity of time. With the story, let's have the whole thing play out in 36 hours or 48 hours. In the first two movies, everything plays out in less than 2 days in each one. So there's energy and momentum. Which I guess is a good point, but
that makes sense.
Not being happy about not being nice about the other anyway.
I think movies in general have gone that direction. I don't think that's like a Genesis specific problem. I think movies in general have like sort of gotten overcomplicated, especially the big blockbusters. Like
Endgame?
Huh?
No.
Endgame, yeah, but like they had 3 hours to do it and they had like 19 movies to build up to it. True. So it like
was the first one that popped into mind. I like that movie. It's just
the original Thor, where they're like in a crazy they're in Asgard, it's all bright and everything, and he goes to land-ass New Mexico. Yeah. I don't know, it just seems like two different movies slapped together.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think you get a lot fewer movies that are, like, small and contained. Everything seems to have to get bigger and more complex.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't think that's really a Genesis-specific problem, that's just the trend of movies.
But, in that same article, he also talks a little bit about the writing process and then pitching to Linda Hamilton and his role as producer. So he says, we spent several weeks breaking story, and which is better than Breaking Bad, I guess. I don't know. And figuring out what type of story we wanted to tell so we would have something to pitch to Linda. We rolled up our sleeves and started to break out the story. And when we got a handle on something, we looked at it as a three-film arc. So there is a greater story to be told. if we get fortunate enough to have to make some money with Dark Fate, we know exactly where we can go with the subsequent films. By the way, I have a very tiny little bit of info, a little bit at the end where the sequels would have gone that we'll get into. Mm. But yeah. Anyway, the article continues. Cameron is quick to point out that Miller is the director of the film in every sense of the term. He says, quote, my belief is that if you get a director who's a grown-up and knows what to do, you turn them loose. My role as producer was in pre-production and prep and shepherding the script. But it was Tim's film. I swear to God. That was me. Sorry. But he says, but it was Tim's film.
No, when for real.
Seriously. I didn't direct it. The fact that he has to explain that makes me think there was already caught, like, there was already a problem.
Yeah. I mean, people already know how Cameron is, but yeah, definitely. I'm guessing he was like, Tim Miller might come out and say some other shit.
This part is like one thing where I was like, holy shit. So anyway, he continues by saying, I focused on getting the script punched up. I didn't feel like we went into the shoot with the script exactly where it should have been. There was a lot of momentum on the project. There was a start date. There was a lot of energy and a lot of go fever. But the script wasn't where it needed to be, so I quietly worked on it in the background and shipped out pages. Sometimes because he was shooting Avatar in Australia or wherever he was.
Yeah.
Sometimes he was never on set, by the way, like never on set. He says, which I don't think I put in here, but he says he never met any of the actors, like the new actors.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. So sometimes I was shipping out pages the day before they shot a scene. I'm not sure that was always 100% helpful, but overall I kept the characters on track and sounding right and being where they needed to be, and that would be such a fucking pain in the ass as a director.
Yeah,
getting a new page, waking up to a new page.
Or anybody on the fucking crew, the fucking like script editor or the fucking continuity person or like the fucking set dresser all of a sudden. Yeah.
And then this last thing I found from this interview was him talking about the state of sci-fi films these days and how they're usually toned down to get that PG-13 rating. And he says, quote, science fiction filmmaking has been compromised over the past couple of decades. That compromise is trying to pander to a larger audience and making these big expensive movies and then following the common wisdom that, well, once you're making one of these movies, the reflex is it must be PG-13. And the thinking is if it's not, then you'll cut out 25 to 30% of your potential earning power. And on a big film, that's your margin. That can be the difference between profitability and losing money. And then he also sort of like talks about how they were shooting each scene twice just in case they had to do a PG-13 rating.
Jesus.
So he says, even going into shooting, we were like, okay, let's cover it both ways. So we would shoot a scene where Sarah, is completely unfiltered and with no mediation, and then shoot it, I don't know what the hell that was, and then shoot it again where it was tamed down. But eventually we said, to hell with this, that's a waste of time. I think the feeling was that everyone wanted to recapture the tone and sensibility of the first two films, which I considered flattering. But, yeah. And I have one last article, James Cameron article. And this is a New York Daily News with just a couple of quotes discussing the movie before we move on to Tim Miller. So this first one is just kind of him discussing why they wanted an R rating for the movie. And he says, quote, there was a consensus that we had to get back to not a formula per se, but to that which felt true for the first two movies. So what is that? Well, it's an R rating. A certain dark, gritty quality, a kind of a leanness. Especially the first film, it had kind of a lean, propulsive quality. All these epic ideas were off screen. There were these big, epic things happening in the future, but that's not what you were seeing in front of you. And, I don't know, it makes sense to me. I'm a simple man that loves his explosions, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly what they tried to do. They tried to make it a blend of Terminator 1 and 2 again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also discusses how the producers and Tim Miller were originally toying with the idea of not bringing Arnold back. So it says the other makers of Dark Fate suggested doing a story without Schwarzenegger's character, but Cameron wouldn't hear any of it. So James Cameron said, I said, look, I get why you want to do that, but I can't do that. I don't want the phone call from my friend of 35 years saying, Jim, you're making a Terminator movie without me. How could you? So you guys...
and he did the impression and everything.
Yeah. And it says, in quotation marks, Arnold impression. So you guys go with God, but if you want me involved, then we've got to figure out how to have Arnold. And I'm I mean, the movie would have been fine with that Arnold, but he's like so completely connected to the franchise that it, I think it would have been a tougher sell without him. Like,
Yeah, definitely. I feel, 100%. Every one of those dipshits that was mad that the female characters were in the lead would have been fucking twice as mad.
And
you would have lost some of the actual general audience who only really associates Terminator with Arnold.
Yeah. And like maybe, and I was thinking like maybe bringing in a big name actor as a Terminator, but like who, I can't imagine any like big name actors wanting to take on the role because it is defined.
I actually think that would be a mistake. I think if you're going to take him out of the movie, then just have, you know, regular like no-name actors be the Terminator. It would be weird because at that point it would look like you were trying to replace him.
Yeah. Like getting and like, so, I couldn't think of anybody besides of Rock, but he'd be weird in
trying not to show emotion. Trying not to be charismatic.
Joe Magdaleno.
Who else is big?
Mm-hmm.
Cena? Cena is proportioned like a cartoon. I don't know what it is. Sorry, just like he's proportioned even weirder than Arnold.
Well, are you saying Arnold's proportion worthy?
Yes, he's proportioned like a god.
Okay, all right.
That's okay.
Nice save there.
Continue. I mean, I still like James Cameron.
Yeah,
I know he's a huge dickhole.
Yeah. Hey, I don't have to work with him, so it's fine. It's entertaining from over here.
I'd be okay working with him. Yes, master. Whenever he says anything. I'm like, hey. He's like, I like you. You're good at sucking up. I'm like, suck anything you... Okay, anyway. Okay, moving on to Tim Miller, his experience. The first article is from GameSpot.com, and I think they were quoting him when he was on a podcast complaining about what went wrong. Which podcast? Not really sure because I'm bad at research and waited until the last second to write this up. So,
it wasn't this one. So,
no.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the article says Miller says that Cameron and he share a lot of interests, but admits that he had a hard time taking his input, knowing that Cameron and other producer David Ellison would have final cut of the film. Says, quote, there was always this assumption that we'd work through everything together. If we disagree, we'd work it out. Cameron did some script edits for the film, writing a few scenes that Miller described as great, and was in New Zealand working on the Avatar sequels during the filming. Miller says that it was a tough shoot with an ever-evolving script, which we learned. Yeah. He also admits that the interview is, quote, probably right when she says that it was an issue that none of the credited writers were women, despite the film having three female leads, which... Yeah,
sure. I mean, James Cameron knows how to write women generally. I'm sure it would have benefited from a woman writer, though.
I think which we'll talk about it in a minute. But I think he got two of them right. Just that last, the Danny character is not great. Anyway, so the edit Miller says is where he and Cameron clashed, and it was quote, "Me and Jim had a disagreement over the director's cut and how it happened. In his mind, the director's cut is the best version of every." Okay, I don't get this. By the way, but okay, so he says in his mind, the director's cut is the best version of everything you shot. In my mind, it's the best movie I can make from what I shot.
Yeah. What do you mean? What don't you get?
The director's cut is the best version. It sounds like the same thing to me.
Oh, I think what Cameron is trying to say is you look at each scene and shot and you just do like, here's the best take.
Okay.
So then what scene or that shot?
Then what's Tim Miller doing?
Well, what Tim Miller's talking about is you, he's talking more about editing, I think, because it's like, what's a good example? I don't know, like the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of stories about how the original Star Wars was saved in the edit by, what's her name?
Yeah.
George Lucas's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. His wife. Because the way he had it was god awful, I guess. Like
George
all
Lucas
the same again? Yeah, all the same scenes were there, all the same characters, all the same lines, it's all the same shit that he shot, but it was bad because it was edited incorrectly. And so I think what Tim Miller is trying to say is it's what I personally believe is the best version of this movie, like me cutting together, you know, everything that I think is the way it should be cut together.
All right. So he says, I did my director's cut and the lights go up and there was a lot of stuff that I'd cut that Jim thought was important. Then it says he admits that the changes made might matter less to audiences than they do to him, though. It is a quote, "I feel like if you saw the movie and I told you the stuff that I was upset about, you'd go, get over it. Why is this important?" And he's basically like, "I hate to lose any battle, but I never give up." Hmm. Then asked for a specific example, Miller notes that he presented the idea of flipping the script and making it so that the humans are losing, and that's why someone has to go back in Dark Fate. Cameron reportedly asked, "What's dramatic about humans losing?" And the two argued back and forth about it. which I'm curious how heated the arguments got to where, I don't know, like, because I've argued with people about stuff that's, because that sounds stupid, but I've also argued with stupid, like, stuff that's stupid like that before. So,
all my arguments about stupid stuff.
Huh?
I said all my arguments about stupid
stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a stupid person, so that makes sense. But I don't, like, what, I guess if you flip it, they would send a human back to destroy what would soon become Legion. Mm-hmm. I could see that. Actually, I don't think that's the worst idea.
He didn't want the humans winning, like, the fact. Anyway, so he says that this stands out as a big argument that Miller lost. He says that the protagonist, Danny, ultimately wasn't portrayed in a way he was happy with. But he said, quote, "It's his franchise, so I have to bow down to him." This next quote is from a Hollywood Reporter article, but I believe it's also from the same interview. But it starts off, industry observers have pointed to franchise fatigue as contributing to the failures of November movies like Dark Fate, Doctor Sleep, which didn't do well, apparently. And Charlie's Angels. What?
There's a Charlie's Angels that was released
then? Yeah, there was one with Kristen Stewart. I think it was Elizabeth
Banks.
Yeah, she directed it. Yeah.
Yep.
But indeed, Dark Fate, that's, I'm assuming, what the fucking fanboys wish it was called. Anyway, indeed, Dark Fate followed a string of so-so Terminator sequels, the baggage of which Miller felt when he was reading the reviews and reactions, which apparently you're not supposed to do. But he said, quote, "The things they seemed to hate the most about the movie were things I can't control. I can't control you didn't like Genesis or you felt betrayed by Terminator 4. I can't help that.
I mean, it's not wrong.
It then goes on to say, Miller acknowledged that there were plenty of creative battles on Dark Fate between him, Cameron, and David Ellison. And he said, quote, "Even though Jim is a producer and David Ellison is a producer, and they technically have final cut and ultimate power, my name is still on it as director. Even if I'm going to lose the fight, I still feel this obligation to fight because that is what a director is supposed to do, fight for the movie." So this next part is what he says happens after Jim Cameron first screened the movie, like his cut of the movie.
Uh-huh.
So he said the lights come up and there was a lot of stuff that I had cut that Jim thought was important and scenes were shot that we had had disagreements on. But the lights come up and Jim says, "We've got a movie." Miller then noted that many of the disagreements came from down to small lines that the director saw, that he saw as poetic and beautiful, but which Jim Cameron just didn't care for. He said, which is just... I don't know. I think he would probably get away with it with anyone else except for James Cameron. Because arguing about lines in a movie?
Yeah.
No producer's going to give a shit about that. Because, like, maybe... I
don't know. It depends on the producer. Like, you know, there are producers that are only interested in the business side of it, and there are producers who are, you know, a lot of directors and stuff turn into producers, and they want to have artistic input, but, like...
Yeah. But he said, I would fight for that line because it was important to me. But yeah. Does that mean an audience would care? Probably not. As far as Donnybrooks go, I don't know what that is. Donnybrooks?
That sounds familiar, but I don't know.
It's just as far as Donnybrooks go, it's not that big of a deal. Small, big, the bigger picture? I don't know.
Wasn't he in Backstreet Boys?
It's like one word, Donnybrooks, D-O-N-N-Y, Brooks.
Oh, all right, it's a scene of uproar and disorder, a heated argument.
Okay. So Jim Cameron also commented in different articles about the first time he watched the rough cut. This is from two different articles. I just crammed them together. But he said, "It wasn't a slam dunk at the time. I felt there were a lot of pathways that were taken that were unnecessary. I'm an editor myself, so I gave notes that were both broad and very specific. I continued in that process up to about 2.5 months ago when we locked picture. I've yet to physically meet the new cast because I never went to set, but I was very involved in the writing. I was very involved in the cutting of the film. And to me, the cutting is really an extension of the writing. It's a last draft, if you will. The set is the domain of the director. There's one captain of the ship, and within that metaphor, and the set and the production and the principal photography is the ship. And I really wish he would have kept going with that ship metaphor until he just got lost in it. He's like, you know, and then they're like,
excuse me, this is James Cameron we're talking about. He's not going to get lost in his own ship metaphor.
Yeah, true.
Sometimes the ship hits an
The ship might turn into a submarine, but he's not going to get lost in it.
He's like, yeah. And then you have the bow, which is like, you know, the key grip guy. And then you have the lifeboats, which are the PAs, because the PAs are really are the lifeboats. And they then had to, like,
mizzen mast.
And then the bottom, the article says edited for what is it? Clarity? Is it?
Yeah. Edited for clarity and brevity.
Yeah. And then Tim Miller continues in that same Hollywood Reporter article explaining what they were disagreeing on. So it says Miller noted that many of the disagreements came down to small lines that director. Yeah, okay, I said that. Five for the line, but probably not. Early in the development, Miller and Cameron disagreed on what should be happening in the future. So, like I said, James Cameron wanted the humans to be winning, as with his films, but Miller wanted the humans to be losing to Legion, like the new version of Skynet. So he says, quote, I suggested Legion is so powerful, the only way to beat it is by going back in time and strangling on the crib.
All right.
Jim says, what's dramatic about humans losing? And I say, well, what's dramatic about humans winning? And they just need to keep on winning? I like a last stand. It's not his thing. On Dark Fate, he found himself in a situation where he did not have ultimate control, and Miller acknowledged he would not likely work with James Cameron again. He said, quote, I can say no, but it has nothing to do with whatever trauma I have from the experience. It's more that I just don't want to be in a situation again where I don't have control over or to do what I think is right.
Yeah.
And he says that they still had a good, they maintain a good relationship. I got an email last week from Jim who said, I know we clashed a little bit. I put it all down to two strong creative people with differences of opinions, and I think it made the movie better. I'll be back in LA in December. Let's go get a beer. That's what James Cameron put. And then he starts talking about how he had dinner with the director. This was after the movie came out and after they knew that it bombed.
Yeah.
So it says that most directors might be worried about being sent to director's jail, but Miller noted that he has a long career with visual effects, so he's pretty much not worried about it, because if he needs to, he can go back to that. But he said the door remains open with David like Skydance, and he said that David Ellison told him, like, what are we doing together next? So, yeah. But then James Cameron also kind of commented on an interview he did with Collider, and this is one of the last things, but they asked him, was there a part of the movie you guys repeatedly fought over because of different opinions? And James Cameron said, I would say many, and the blood is still being scrubbed off the walls from those creative battles. He's got visuals. He's good. This guy's good. This is a film that would be forged in fire. But that's a creative process, right? I mean, my work with Robert on Alita was Battle Angel. Did you watch that?
I've seen parts of it. I've never seen the whole thing.
Was very different. Robert loved the script, loved everything. He said, I just want to make the movie. I want to make the movie the way you see it. And I was like, no. You've got to make the movie. You've got to make your movie. I had the reverse experience with Tim, which is Tim wanted to make his movie, which just...
And I didn't want him to. And I wanted him to make my movie.
And I'm like, yeah, but I kind of know a little about this world. And maybe just because it was a Terminator movie?
Yeah, that might be it. I mean, yeah. Maybe it's more precious to him than he wants to let on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I had, and he says, so I had the matter and the antimatter version of that producerial experience. I don't know what that word is. Anyway, so basically Jim Cameron is a my way or the highway type of guy, which we already kind of knew.
Yeah, definitely.
But...
I mean, I kind of have to agree with Miller on certain parts of it. Like, in the lead up to all this, you notice that there's, and maybe it's just the interviews that you picked out, I don't know. But in the lead up to the movie, it's a lot of, like, people, it's a lot of Cameron talking about how things are going. And in the aftermath, after the movie bombed, it's a lot of people asking Tim Miller, like,
what happened?
So what happened? Why'd you fuck up? And it's because his name is on the fucking, like...
Yeah.
It's like when the movie is being hyped up, you want Cameron out front because everybody knows Cameron. But when the movie does poorly,
he no comments it.
Yeah, they fucking point at the director. That's what happens. They point at Tim Miller because his name is plastered, like his name is the first thing up in the credits.
That's okay. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like the thing that sucks is, first off, you're not gonna win an argument against James Cameron because any studio is gonna
Cameron. when David, what's his name, David
Ellison,
Ellison. Clearly, they've got a working relationship that goes back way farther than him and Tim Miller. Like, yeah.
And I'm assuming that's probably part of the reason why they picked Tim Miller, because, a first-time director? Maybe just so...
Like, I mean, second time, yeah.
Well, second time, sorry. But push him around maybe a little bit? Like,
yeah, I'm sure they thought that they were going to do the Marvel thing where it's like, no, we're going to give you a huge franchise and you can pretty much just do whatever we say.
Yeah. But also, apparently, this happened with Tim Miller on Deadpool 2.
I mean, he didn't direct that movie, so that's what happened.
There's a very small quote from IndieWire explaining. So he says, Miller's experience with Cameron came after he left directing the gig for Deadpool 2 over similar reason. And he says, quote, "It became clear that Ryan Reynolds wanted to be in control of the franchise. You can work that way as a director quite successfully, but I can't. I don't mind having a debate, but if I can't win, I don't want to play." And I don't think you can.
Okay, well, that sounds shitty.
I don't think you can negotiate every creative decision. There's too many to make. So Ryan's the face of the franchise, and he was the most important component of that by far. So if he decides he wants control of it, then he's going to have control of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I mean, considering how much of his like personal stock he put into that movie, I would say he kind of earned that. I don't know. Like, Miller did a really good job of directing the first movie. I think it looks good and all that stuff, but. Clearly, Reynolds is the driving force behind that, so that makes a lot of sense.
So that's all for the behind-the-scenes drama. I have two very quick notes for possible sequels, and then we're done with the trivia. But cool. They're very quick, I promise. But the first one's from Mackenzie Davis from some website that I don't have time to write because, holy crap, it's 15 minutes till we record when I was writing that. But anyway, while not getting too specific, this is from the website, while not getting too specific with hypothetical Terminator 7 plans, Davis explained to the host of a podcast, quote, "It was going to be a sort of timeline thing where there'd be another timeline that you'd explore. Like, there's no resurrection, but she came from the future, so..." And then it cuts off. However, in the key caveat to this latest alternate timeline setup, Davis confirms that the film would have taken place in the future. So... there was something I found on Reddit that someone saying that he's like, oh yeah, I worked on the film and having the inside scoop on what the new, I didn't even bother with that one. Anyway, so the second quote is from Linda Hamilton about returning to a possible sequel. And she says, quote, "I would really appreciate maybe a smaller version with where so many millions are not at stake. Today's audience is just so unpredictable. I can't tell you how many laymen just go, well, people don't go to the movies anymore. That's not Hollywood analysis. That just comes out of almost everybody's mouth. It should definitely not be such a high-risk financial venture, but I would be quite happy to never return." So no, right. I am not hopeful because I would really love it to be done. So I think Linda Hamilton should be good for the next one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for the trivia. Thanks for hanging in there, fellas.
Have you ever killed anyone?
Yeah, but they were all bad.
Okay, hey, all right. Let's get to the kill count. Cool. I guess I'll go first because I got to look stuff up.
Yeah.
I don't think they killed that many people in this. I know that the Rev 9 went through and murdered everyone in that.
Mm-hmm.
The
detention center?
Detainee center.
Oh.
But,
no, it's detention center.
I'm going to say 47.
Got it. I also think it's going to be kind of surprisingly low, and I'm going to undercut Aaron just a little bit. My guess is 36.
Well, I think you're right, because I half-assedly counted. But, I'm going 6,347,253,902, because they do mention billions died, so...
That's a solid point.
Wait, what did you say, Chris?
I said 36.
All right. Well,
okay. That was a joke answer. If we're not counting the 6 billions that died, or the billions that died, I'm going 42.
Okay. I don't remember what this has them all on IMDb. Apparently, like it's like a list of all of them, which I looked past the other ones, but it is 64. So I won, but
really,
I just like looked. Terminator Genesis is right above it.
What does it say?
It doesn't say anything. It just says 64. It's not the breakdown like I had before. I don't know where I got. I should probably save that site where I found the breakdown. But it was. It's just a body count that's on IMDb. Like apparently they do that too. List of deaths. There we go. Okay. Yeah,
I'm wondering where this big pocket of deaths.
Here we go. Genesis, Dark Fate. This only has a few of them. This one only has 4 because it's on the wiki.
Oh.
Yeah, and it only has like the main ones. But yeah, it says 64. Damn. Sorry, guys. I didn't get a chance to look it up. Okay, so moving on. This one has this is an 8-minute video for the kill count. Holy shit.
Jesus.
But moving on. We got favorite lines.
One wrong choice. It can destroy the look of the entire room. There was this one customer that came to me. He wanted to have salad colored drapes in a little girl's room. I said, don't do it. You need butterflies, polka dots, balloons.
Hey, Joe, what do you got?
My favorite line is Arnold saying, I am very funny.
That's a good one. Mine is right before that. It's just, this would be very hard to explain to Alicia.
I had two. It was the whole, like, these weapons will be vital to protect my family. Also, this is Texas. Yeah. But then, like, him at, like, improving with the, don't do it. You need butterflies, polka dots, balloons. It was just great to me, too. Yeah. Okay, so anyhow, before we get into the irons pumped, let's play a little trivia game that we call Total Recall.
What do you want, Mr. Quaid?
The same as you, to remember.
Open your mind. Open your mind.
So all it is 7 random trivia questions from the movie that we just watched, and the first one to get three correct wins. Yes, because it's only 2 of us. Okay. So the rules, Chris starts reading the question. Whoever knows the answer can buzz in using the name as the answer. Keep in mind, second you buzz in, he'll stop reading the question. So yeah. Ready to go?
Yeah, we all know how this works. And there are not 7 questions because there's only 3 of us.
Oh, sorry. So, yeah, there's 5 questions for this
one. There's 5 questions.
But yeah.
I mean, technically, there could have been 3 questions. All right. So... this one was oddly hard for me to write these questions for, so whatever. Some of these questions might be shitty, but I don't care. let's see. Question number 1. What part of his body did the Terminator claim was metal when he set off the metal detector?
Joe. Hip.
That is correct.
Shit. Okay, Joe's got one. I don't like how Joe always wins. I like that we don't keep track fucking of it and owe each other beers anymore. Oh, that's good. That was Joe's decision, by the way, so I don't take blame for that. Yeah, anyway.
I don't drink. That's fine. Question number 2. What TV show did Sarah Connor claim had an entire episode dedicated to her?
Aaron.
That's still Joe.
Damn it. America's Most Wanted.
That is correct. See, I would have got that wrong. I thought it was America's Funniest Home Videos. Okay.
Never mind. It's the therapy video from the beginning of the movie. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. I gotta get this next one right.
Question number 3. What was the name of the Ramos family dog?
Joe.
I was gonna say Joe too. Joe. I was like, wait, isn't that Joe?
Taco.
God damn it.
That is correct.
I knew that.
He even caught on to when I said translated. He got it just late enough. I was going to say translated into English. The name was Taquito. And I would have accepted Taco or Little Taco because the subtitles translated as Taco. But it means Little Taco, right?
Yeah.
Because Taco is a Spanish word.
Yeah. But you can use Ito as.
Well, I think he was just being like cute with the dog.
Yeah. So the dog's name would still be Taco. We can call him Taquito.
They all called it Taquito. I thought its name was literally Taquito.
Maybe because it was a tiny dog, wasn't it?
It was a little dog. Okay, anyway, doesn't matter. And Joe then, got then it.
The white
he
people
wins.
And then the white people were translated into Taco.
Yeah.
They're not going to know what taquito means. It just says roll taco. Like when it's in translation. It's like, why is the dog's name rolled taco?
Okay, what were the other questions?
These are the slightly harder questions. I don't know. What was the name of the auto plant manager who tried to fire Diego?
Shit, Steve. I don't know.
Nope. It's Jack. I would have accepted Craig or Mr. Grumman.
Okay.
Craig.
And
it's a good white guy name. Craig.
It is a good white name.
Who names their kid Craig?
That's who.
Parents of Craig's out there.
I guess Scottish people, but whatever. And then the last question. Over what precious item was Grace's father murdered?
A can of peaches.
That is correct.
Oh, right. I was like, wait, Grace? Okay. Yep. All right. Who the fuck is Grace? But yeah.
All right. That's Joe, the undisputed champion.
Dire circumstances.
All right. I'm going to get one of these. I feel like I won one, but I don't remember.
Sure you are, buddy. We'll get those rabbits someday.
Anyway. Okay. All right. Well, moving on.
Yep.
When the big man was killed, you must have wounded it. Its blood was on the leaves.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
All right. So now we're going to give this movie a rating. We're going to do one on a scale of 1 to 5. Irons pumped, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Please note that this is a rating for Arnold movies, because if you're just movies in general, that all be 5s. So, Chris, what say you?
I say I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was pretty darn good. I was toying around with giving this a 3.5 or a 4, and...
Damn!
While I do enjoy this movie quite a bit, I think at the end of the day, there's just not enough Arnold in it. Arnold doesn't come in until like halfway through the movie, and his role is certainly diminished versus other Terminator movies. So I think I'm just going to give this a solid 3.
All right. Okay, so I have a quick question for both of you, which I guess we can answer as we answered. What would you rate it as far as the Terminator movies of what we've seen so far? Your answer. So Genesis and like, because I also wanted
only watched the two, right?
Like as far as the rankings, seen two so far.
Yeah, I prefer this over Genesis.
Okay. Yes.
All right. So Chris gives it a 3. We're gonna throw it on the Spreadeditor. Okay. What about you, Aaron?
Well, I didn't have time to write my thoughts down, but what did I give Genesis? Where is Genesis? I gave it a 3? Okay. Uh-huh. I'm going to say 3. It's got to be a 3. It can't be a 3.5. This movie made Genesis kind of seem like a cartoon to me. Like, it's a little more in line with the Terminator movies. Like, as far as, like what James Cameron was saying, it's back to...
Yeah, I think the gritty tone is a little closer to 1 and 2.
Yeah, exactly. It basically took all the best parts of the sequels from T2 to Dark Fate. Like the, I can't remember what, like the aging Terminator thing, they just improved on stuff. Like he already had that idea because he gave that idea to Genesis, but then like he didn't tell them what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And they, again, I'm only comparing this to Genesis, but they like with the whole Pops thing, and it was just the whole name thing and just everything about it was just so fucking cartoony. Like... Linda Hamilton does a great job. I was gonna say Phillips, but that's not the right name. I think that's the singer of like Wilson Phillips. Mackenzie Davis does a great job. Everyone does mm-hmm. good. The only downside I'd say is probably that Danny character, which is just because it was so like forced with that character.
Yeah, which, I think that was more of the writing than the actress.
Yeah, for sure. And I was trying to figure out why this movie works better than Genesis. And then I wrote down, because Grace isn't a cocky douchebag like how Jai Courtney was playing Kyle Reese, which probably would have been fine if Michael Biehn had played him the same way in Terminator, but it was a complete like departure or whatever. He played Kyle Reese the same way that Mackenzie Davis plays Grace. Michael Biehn did. Which makes her character closer to that character. The tone of this is just a little bit more consistent with the first two. The only weak point, like I said, is Danny, which is weird because it's basically the same character as Sarah in the first movie. but it doesn't work as well, and it's just because the writing, I don't know.
I mean, I think it's a similar character. The problem is that they try really hard to fast forward her arc to get her to Terminator 2, Sarah.
Yeah, which I think we discussed last time.
Exactly. We talked about that during the movie.
Okay, but so I'd say, I don't remember what I said. Oh, 3, I guess, which is the same, but even though I did like it better, I just can't do a 3.5 for it. Anyway, Joe?
I disagree with everything you guys are saying.
Fair enough.
Like they tried to be gritty with this movie, but it's not like gritty like the first two. It's like false gritty? I don't know how to put that. Like, it's like when you buy pairs of jeans that have rips in the knees. That's what this movie is with the grits. You know, you didn't earn those holes in the knees. It's just kind of there. And like the script's, I don't know, kind of boring. And it just seems like such like a retread of everything. And look, I know Genesis is imperfect and most people hate that fucking movie. And it's way too shiny and they're very miscast. But I like the idea for that movie was way better than the idea for this. The idea for this was just like, what if we do like Terminator like 1 again and kind of mix it with a little Terminator 2, and like set it in Mexico. Like, cool. All right. Great. I don't know. There's just something about this movie that's not, it's just lacking. And even like Terminator 1, the script itself is not like super fab. Like the idea of it is great, but like the script itself is not like mind-blowing, or you know, it's not like a true life script or something, but it's just so well executed because it just feels, it's like actually gritty and dark and like it's like a horror film. And this one just didn't feel like that. I don't know, maybe it's just the idea of modern movies and we've got to the point now where we expect everything to like work out for everybody. Maybe we're watching too many fucking Marvel movies or something. But, I don't know. I'll give this one a 2.5.
How'd you like the villain? Like, compared to, like, which Genesis just had the T-1000, so. I really like
it had John Connor.
It had the John
Connor. True, it did have John Connor, too. But I like the new Terminator.
Yeah.
How'd you like the new Terminator?
It's... Like, what we had with Terminator 2 was like, oh shit, it's liquid metal, like, what the fuck? And then after that, it's just been like, hey, it's kind of an amalgamation of the T-800 and the T-1000. Yeah. They can do, like, so it's just like the T-1000, but it can, like, separate itself. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's just kind of, like, kind of, like, didn't scare me. Like, it didn't feel desperate. I don't know. Like, Robert Patrick was just creepy in this guy. Not that he's a bad actor or anything, but it's just, I don't know. We've seen it before. Like, you know, do something else.
Yeah.
I don't think you
can. I don't disagree with a single thing Joe has said. I just feel it to a lesser extent than he does.
Yeah, the same.
And I'd rather watch Genesis any day.
I'd rather never watch Genesis again.
I think I'm just a James Cameron fanboy. Like, I like treating people that are working for me like shit. Or just demeaning them, so I'm on board with whatever James Cameron's doing.
Yeah, if James Cameron had directed this movie in like a James Cameron style, then it probably would have been a great movie. And this is not to shit on Tim Miller or anything, but just like, you know, not everything's everyone's forte. Or maybe James Cameron's just really good at doing like the kind of desperation thing or something. I don't know. He's good at some shit. So,
which I'm assuming is the difference that Tim Miller was talking about when they say, which Chris was saying, the difference between the best shot and that, like, it's like, where James Cameron will sit there and like, he seems like the type to be like, do it again. Nope.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
So, after we threw that on the Spreadeditor, we have some new rankings. I'm not going to read them all because you're going to get bored, but we're going to start at number 6, which is End of Days, which is a 3.125. And we have Terminator Genesis, 2.9. And then we have this movie, Dark Fate, coming in below Genesis, as it should be, at a 2.83. Below that is Jingle All the Way, 2.75. Raw Deal and Collateral Damage, Raw deal 2.75, collateral damage 2.375. And that is the current list on the Spreadeter.
Running Man's still up top. Number one. Yep.
Yeah. Which Twins is the buff commando, I disagree with.
Which I've... Man,
we're not six days holding strong, though.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm really surprised at. Like,
I don't know, 3.5?
I don't know. We gave Eraser a 2.5. You might need to.
We're gonna have to go through these again, like how we did that one time. Because maybe it. I don't know. Like there's a lot. Yeah, Eraser probably would bump up to at least a 3.
I feel like every single time Aaron wants to rearrange them just so he can get the list right. Like he's got his list and it's separate from his actual scores.
Well, no, like Rayanne. Anyway, okay. I'd probably bump Eraser up to a 3 because now I'm looking at the list. I'm like, Eraser was definitely better than Genesis. So, anyway, okay, that's all.
All right.
All right, so we're done talking, and I guess we will.
Get the party, Richter!